put faith into the context of stand-up comedy, because it's a great metaphor for the sort of grit it takes to put yourself all the way out on the edge. If you lob a joke out into the audience, and all you hear is crickets, it's just you up there, with nowhere to turn, sucking on stage for all to see. You might as well just go ahead and do it naked to complete the nightmare. But when you nail a joke, all eyes are on you. All the laughter and glory is yours. It's thrilling. It's terrifying. It's all or nothing, and it's all you. When you go big and take the scary leaps you need to take to change your financial sitch, hire an expensive stylist, enroll in beauty school, write your book, buy a castle and turn it into a disco, you're up there on stage with no idea what's on the other side of those blinding lights, free-falling through space. But here's the great news. If you nail it, party time. If you bomb, you now know what didn't work. So when you go out there and give it another shot, you get to do so with more info. Taking a leap of faith is a win-win. Treading water in your comfort zone for the rest of your life is a snore yawn. Faith, like all other facets of our mindset, is a muscle. The more you use it, the stronger it gets. The bigger the leap, the stronger your faith muscle needs to be. Staying steady, focused, and fixated on your faith when the poop really hits the fan marks the difference between those who are successful and those who fail. It's usually right after we think we literally cannot take one moment more of the uncertainty or the waiting or the pressure or the disappointments. Holy hell balls, are you trying to kill me over here? That the big investor comes through, or the counteroffer is accepted, or the soulmate walks through the door. A test of faith is like playing chicken with the universe. The universe wants you to grow and bloom into the most glorious version of yourself. Growth happens through friction and challenge, and the lessons we learn through these experiences. Because the universe is so excited for you to be all you can be, it is going to send you all the learning experiences you need. Here's a flat tire on your way to your wedding. Here's a hurricane and a flood the day you open your new business. Here's nowhere to park when you're late for the job interview of your dreams. When you have faith that everything happens as it's meant to, you open yourself up to receive the lesson, to stay the course until you're successful, and to not totally lose your shit. In the midst of the particularly trying lessons and growing experiences, you have to hang in there like your life depends on it. With the really big stuff, very often you're required to get to the point where your faith is the only thing you've got left. Because you've gone so far out to the edge that anything familiar or safe or rational isn't even a blip in your rearview mirror anymore. It's like flying or surfing or tripping. You have to focus on your faith and surrender to the cosmic rock tumbler because your only other option is to freak out and crash. Badassery comes to those who take risks. I recently had an offer from a production company to option the rights to one of my books. The offer was good, but we were haggling over one critical percentage and neither of us would budge. I wanted more, they wanted to give me less, and no matter how much we rearranged and tweaked other parts of the contract, this one point always just sat there, staring at us with blank eyes, the dead cow that wouldn't move. I loved these people, felt they really understood my writing and my sense of humor, and was so psyched to work with them. When they said the dreaded words, "This is our final offer," and that damn percentage had yet to go up, I had to take a big old leap of faith and pass. I didn't want to. We didn't have offers from any other production companies I was anywhere near as excited to work with. But the percentage felt low, and I knew I'd be resentful if I took it. I had to have faith that an even more awesome offer was right around the corner, and that my decision was solid, instead of freaking out about, what the hell did I just do? I just passed up the opportunity to have someone make a TV show out of my book while I lie around getting hot stone massages and count my money. Consciously keeping my focus on my faith was a challenge. I ain't gonna lie, but I did. I kept reminding myself that, of course, the deal I desired was on its way. I kept envisioning this deal, kept feeling into it, kept being grateful for it. I'm thrilled to report that their final offer was like Cher's never-ending final tour. They came around the following week and offered us what we asked for, and now we're all happily moving forward together. I never would have had the strength to pass, stay the course, and wind up in this awesome situation without dear old Faith. At the end of this chapter, I'm going to share some of my favorite methods for developing faith muscles so firm you could bounce a quarter off them. But now I want to spend a moment talking about the granddaddy of all personal workout coaches, gratitude. Whether it's strengthening your faith, or your beliefs, or your frequency, or your thoughts, or your relationship with universal intelligence, gratitude is one-stop shopping on your road to mightiness. Unlike almost anything else, gratitude puts you in close contact with the spiritual realm. Gratitude, above all other thoughts, unites you with universal intelligence because you're basically matching your frequency to the frequency of the universe via thoughts and feelings of love. Think of it like this. Let's say you live in a neighborhood with lots of kids, and you bake a batch of cookies and hand them out. Some kids are so wrapped up in their play that they wolf them down without giving it much thought. Some kids whine about wanting seconds, but there's one kid who shows deep appreciation. He's grateful for the cookie, for the gesture, for your big old heart. He helps you clean the kitchen, refill your bird feeder, set up your iPhone. He's the kid who gets as many cookies as he wants and gets to lick the bowl. He's met your energy of giving with his energy of gratitude, and his high-frequency response opens him up to receive more of that same energy from you as well as someone else. Wealth appreciates for the appreciative. Gratitude allows you to raise the energy you meet each situation with. When you're grateful for the lessons in challenging situations, instead of feeling pissed off or put out or sorry for yourself, you raise your frequency and open yourself up to receiving more high-frequency experiences, instead of repeating crappy old ones. Resentment attracts more resentment. Denial keeps you stuck in the same place. But gratitude gets you out of the loop of lowness, opens you to new possibilities, and sets you free. Let's say you're unemployed and you're driving to a job interview and you get into a car accident. Now you've missed the interview, lost the potential income, and you're going to have to go deeper into debt to get a new car. I'm all for cursing and kicking tires and bursting into tears and getting the rage and frustration out of your system. This isn't about denying or suppressing your feelings, but it is about choosing to perceive your life in a powerful way. Even if you have no freaking idea what the lesson is in this situation, once you've had your temper tantrum, be grateful that it happened. You are in one moment in time, stranded on the side of the freeway, suddenly surrounded by shattered glass and traffic cones, and you have no idea how this situation is going to play out in the scope of your life. You could discover years later that it saved you from taking a job you would have hated instead of getting the one you now love. You could fall in love with the EMT who shows up on the scene of your accident. Or you could finally wake up and decide to do whatever it takes to get rich because having your car totaled was the final straw that inspired you to face your money issues and go whole hog to change your life. You can choose to be a victim to your circumstances or take responsibility for how you choose to perceive them. You can't see the silver lining through victim goggles. Have faith that you and the universe have created everything for your growth, and be grateful for it, no matter what. Get practiced at making gratitude your go-to. Notice the 8 trillion things around you at all times that you can be grateful for, and feel into the grateful expectation for all the things coming your way. The good, the bad, the ugly, the salsa stain you just got on your new white shirt. Become a gratitude machine for all of it. There is no lack of things to be grateful for if you remember to pay attention. If you're feeling frustrated and upset by your lack of income, spending some real time on gratitude is critical, especially if you feel like you're doing everything right. If you're clear on your specifics, hauling ass, taking big risks, making scary sales calls, paying people money you're scared to spend to help you get your website up, and still, no dinero. WTF! If you've got everything right, but you're dropping the ball on being grateful, you are most likely pushing the money away out of desperation for this freaking money to come in already. Desperation repels, gratitude attracts. When you're desperate, you're stuck in the worry that the money's not there and that you need to get it, rather than knowing that it's already here and there's no need to get anything. Remember, money is currency and currency is energy. When you switch into gratitude mode and focus on feeling grateful for all you have and all that's coming your way, even if there isn't any money anywhere in sight at the moment, you strengthen your faith that the money will be there for you and align yourself energetically with this belief, and you will start manifesting the very things and opportunities you're grateful for. I have a friend who's an interior designer. At the beginning of every year, she figures out how much money she'd like to make, what it's for, gets all in a tizzy about it, and then she drives around her town and looks at all the houses, seeing each one as an opportunity to realize her dream. She obviously doesn't decorate every house, but she uses this exercise to anchor in the belief that there are countless houses and people who could use her services, who she could help and who can help her in return by paying her. For this, she is deeply grateful. Her faith is rock solid that of course she can have what she desires, and every year she meets her goal. Even if she doesn't have one damn client at the beginning of her little driving tour, she is grateful for all the clients that she knows the universe is sending her. It's like when you're on a plane and you take off on a drizzling, dark, depressing day. You look out the window at the gray sky, the sad little houses below getting misted with rain. Then you head right back into the dark clouds themselves. It's black and bumpy and scary. And then, ta-da! All of a sudden, you pop out on top of it all into blue sky, fluffy clouds, and sunshine. The sunshine and fluffy clouds were there all along. You just couldn't see them from your perspective. I don't care how insane or hopeless your situation appears to you right now, because it's not the truth. It's just what you're experiencing at the moment. There's an entirely different and sunny reality out there waiting for you. All you have to do is make the decision to blast through your own storm clouds of fear, doubt, and worry. Stay in grateful expectation with unshakable faith that the sun is there even though you can't yet see it, and stay the course through the turbulence until you reach the other side. To get rich. Suggested money mantra. Say it, write it, feel it, own it. I love money and am grateful every day that it's surrounding me with its glorious goodness. 1. Take 5 things in your life that frighten you, bum you out, irritate you. Find reasons to be grateful for them and write them down. And feel this gratitude. Don't just give it lip service. 2. Make a list every evening before bed of 10 things that you're grateful for. 3. List 5 reasons you have faith in yourself. 4. List 5 reasons you have faith in the universe. 5. Give comes from abundance. Get comes from lack. Place your focus on abundance and strengthen your faith by giving away money every day for 29 days. Give as little as a nickel or as much as you can in whatever way you can. Do it secretly whenever possible. 6. Faith requires patience. All seeds have a gestation period, and it's up to the universe, not us, how long that period is. Getting all uptight and freaked out doesn't make it go any faster. Put 3 things in place to help yourself stay patient while keeping your faith strong. Here are some options. Practicing deep breathing anytime you feel yourself starting to freak out. Repeating a mantra like, "It's a coming, I can feel it." Soaking in the feelings of how it will be once it arrives. Get super specific and have these tools at the ready. What you focus on, you create more of. So focusing on impatience equals lack equals pushing it away. Choose what to focus on to strengthen your faith and patience, and you will be victorious. Please fill in the blank. I'm grateful to money because... Chapter 8. Decisive Action. The Choice of Champions. I'm obsessed with this movie called Touching the Void, about these 2 guys who climb some gigantic mountain that's never been summited by humans before because it's like the Death Star of snow and wind and icy forlornness. But they're into it, and they go, and they summit, and it's all high fives, and woohoo, we did it, and I think I can see my house from here. And then, on the way down, of course, blizzard. I watch a lot of these types of extreme survival movies, where people have to eat each other's frozen bodies after a plane crash or cut their own arm off when a boulder lands on it and traps them in a canyon. But Touching the Void is high atop my list because, holy crap, what happens to one of the guys? I mean, just when you think things can't get worse, they get so much worse you find yourself screaming, "Oh my God," out loud, even if you're watching by yourself. I'm not going to give away all the details because I really want you to see it, but I am going to talk about the ending, because this guy is served one colossal shit biscuit after another, after another, after another, and his mindset is the only reason he gets out of there alive. You know at the beginning of the movie that he survives, by the way, so no need to thank me. He has to traverse an endless expanse of frozen glacier that could, at any moment, crack open beneath him and send him spiraling down into a giant, bottomless crevasse. Then, once he's off the glacier, he has to stumble through an impossibly jagged terrain of boulders, all of which he does with a broken leg, a face that looks like a pepperoni pizza from frostbite and sunburn, frostbitten fingers, frostbitten toes, no food, no water, no sunglasses, so snowblind, covered in his own excrement, and he has a really bad song stuck in his head. He's trying to use his ice axe as a crutch, which doesn't really work, so he winds up slipping and falling and banging his mangled leg on rocks nearly every single step he takes, weeping and hollering in pain each time. But he never gives up. He just hops and falls and screams his way back to base camp, which, by the way, may or may not be deserted by the time he finally gets there. His team may have packed up and left him for dead. This agonizing journey seems to go on for 900 years. And if you're like, "Wait, is she describing my journey with trying to make money?" Listen up, because there's a lot of good stuff here that will help you escape the icy forlornness of your empty bank account. The first and most important thing this climber did was to decide that he was going to live. This might seem like a no-brainer, the instinctual will to live and all, but have you decided to live? I mean, really live, the way that you know you'd love to? If you're serious about getting rich enough to live your life to the fullest, you have to decide to do it with the tenacity of a man facing life-threatening and unbeatable odds with a really bad song stuck in his head. Because the second something goes wrong or gets hard or costs a lot of money or time, if you've decided light instead of decided for reals, the second the going gets tough, you'll be pulling out your favorite excuses, scripting convincing soliloquies on why quitting makes excellent sense, and weighing your options. Well, if I just give up and lie here, I reckon I'll be frozen solid in a couple hours, won't feel a damn thing after that, and then I can gaze up at the stars until I slowly slip away and the birds start picking at my tore-up leg. You have to have a 10-ton gorilla of no-nonsense decidedness breathing down your neck to do what it takes, plow past your fears and subconscious hell knows, and leap into the unknown. Deciding means there is no plan B. You've yanked in your one foot out the door, and now both feet are inside, fully on board, ready to kick some ass. If you've made a backup plan, you haven't made a decision. The Latin roots of the word decide literally mean to cut off, meaning all other options fall away and you are committed to the decision alone. People have such meltdowns and resistance against making decisions because they panic and fear that by deciding on one thing, they will miss out on all the other cool things they want to do. Meanwhile, you can't do anything if you try to do everything. One of the biggest banana peels on the road to success is fragmenting your time and focus. If you're all over the place, you're half-assing a bunch of different things instead of kicking ass at one thing. Figure out how you're going to get rich, make the no-nonsense decision to keep going until you reach your goal, and, as part of your reward, you'll get to do all the other things you couldn't do while you were busy sticking by your decision to get rich. If you listen to only one thing I say and did just this one thing, decided with 100% commitment that you will get rich and stick to your resolve to do so until you're rolling in it, you would be victorious. Because when you decide, you automatically become obsessed with thoughts of making it happen. You're looking everywhere for opportunities, scary ones. Your faith is strong like bull because if you didn't believe getting rich was possible, you wouldn't have decided to do it in the first place. You're grateful that what you desire already exists. It's all you think about and has become real in your mind. You take huge risks and you have zero patience for anyone who tells you it's not going to work. Think about it. You can make a decision as menial as changing the color of your bathroom and you're suddenly a force of nature. Looking at the paint on walls you've seen a million times a whole new way. Talking excitedly about nothing else. Inspiring friends to leap behind plants when they see you approaching with yet more paint samples in your hands. A firm decision sets everything in motion, your mindset and your actions, and also alerts universal intelligence that this is how it's going to be, and it starts moving everything you need in your direction. Your desires are brought to you via thought, and you receive them by deciding to take action. I want to point out here that when I say that the universe starts moving everything you need in your direction, this goes for ideas as well as opportunities, people, and things. When you make a decision and alert universal intelligence to bring it on, you have to pay close attention to any thoughts and big new ideas that come into your head. You must catch yourself before your old conditioning can fling itself in your path and try to block the new you. What, just jump on a plane and show up on Uncle Steve's doorstep to ask him for a job? No way, that's insane. One good idea that comes in out of nowhere can change your entire life, but it ain't gonna do nothing if you don't act on it, and your subconscious is so ninja it can stop you without you even realizing what's happening. Brilliant ideas are love notes from the universe that say, "This is for you. I think you're hot and capable. Go share your stunning you-ness with the world." I can't tell you how much time I wasted. Okay, 40 years. Pretending I could do things differently, instead of acting on ideas that seemed out of my reach or would have cost me money I didn't want to spend. In other words, ideas that would have forced me to grow. I blazed by countless strokes of genius without even giving these ideas the time of day, just instantly tossed them aside as impossible. Next. Then back to complaining, spinning out, wondering why, oh why, can't I get out of my suckhole? The universe must have been like, I just gave you exactly what you asked for. Are you freaking kidding me? A great example of a life-changing idea is one that came to our poor climber stranded on the mountain. One of the few possessions that somehow made it through his ordeal was his wristwatch. As he's lying in the blinding snow, gazing across the insane amount of ground he has to cover with his janky leg and empty water bottle, he picks a spot off in the distance where there's a bit of an incline or a drop-off or something noticeable that marks it, and decides he has to get there in 20 minutes. He sets the timer on his watch, and no matter how much pain he's in or what obstacles he happens upon along the way, all his thoughts, energy, and determination are focused on getting to that spot before the timer goes off. He said it was the only way he could handle crossing the devastating expanse before him without completely flipping out about how impossible it seemed. He took each 20-minute challenge extremely seriously. He made reaching his goal before the timer went off non-negotiable and urgent, and understood that if he blew it, a whole lot more was at stake than just losing against a wristwatch. When we set out to make big changes in our lives, it's very common for the beast of overwhelm to lunge. We still have everything going on in our present lives, and now we're adding more stuff to our to-do list in order to achieve new goals? Are you kidding me? And it's not just more stuff. It's all the big, scary stuff that we've been too wimpy to do up until now. And it's all so big and crazy, and suddenly you feel like, holy crap, I can't move. Seriously, I think something's happened to my arms. I can't lift them. And then, once again, mastering your mindset comes to the rescue. Overwhelm, just like calm, is a state of mind, and all you have to do is choose which party you're going to attend. Overwhelm. When you make the unhelpful decision to stop breathing, lose perspective, and forget you're in control of your life. Here are a couple of ways to beat the beast of overwhelm back into its cage. 1. Investigate the specifics. We cause ourselves so much unnecessary pain when we fly off the handle and assume that the vague, infinite details of our lives are crushing us to death. Meanwhile, we usually have no idea what we're talking about. For example, I have a million emails to answer, and I have to pick up the kids and make dinner, and I have to apply for a loan for my new business. I am never going to get it all done. Becomes post-investigation. The emails will take 45 minutes to answer because there are actually 12 of them, not a million. Dinner takes 30 minutes to throw together. I can get my neighbor to pick up the kids, and I'll have plenty of time to fill out my loan application. Oh, certainly. There are some times when we've bitten off more than we can chew, but I promise you, the majority of your overwhelm can be set at ease by getting some clarity. 2. Chunk your to-dos down into bite-sized pieces. Facing the task of writing an entire book will make you want to lie down in the road. Sitting down to write one chapter is exciting. Facing the task of doubling your income by studying your ass off, getting into medical school, going to medical school, interning, and opening a private practice will make you envy your bartender's career choice. Digging into the information in the first chapter of your medical textbook is exciting. Facing the task of traversing miles and miles of unfriendly, frozen terrain with a body that's been through a wood chipper will make you want to exit stage right. Spending the next 20 minutes getting from point A to point B with the same wood-chipped body is not exciting, but, you know, sucks less. The other critical thing chunking your time does is provide focus. Using the example of the dude stuck on the mountain again, during his 20-minute spurts, he was focused on nothing but the task at hand. This focus did two things. One, it strengthened his faith. What you focus on, you create more of, and all he focused on was hauling his ass to the desired endpoint. End of story. No thoughts of stopping or failing or boo-hooing. He focused solely on the possibility of success, and that's what he achieved over and over, and each time he did, his faith got stronger. Second, this steadfast focus helped him maximize his time. The dude did not have the luxury of screwing around, writing his name with his pee in a snowbank, or making snow angels. He was in serious need of a glass of water, pronto, so every second counted. We too are going to die, and every second counts in our lives, but we tend to forget about this urgency and spend our precious time on Earth procrastinating, whining, focusing on and believing in thoughts that hold us back instead of getting the job done. People who spend 8 hours a day at a job spend about 3 collective hours being productive and the rest of the time hanging out at the water cooler, staring blankly into the fridge in the break room, thinking about sex, watching ducks chase a dog around a bush on Facebook, etc. If you feel like you have all the time in the world to do something, you will take all the time in the world. If you have 20 minutes, the task will take you 20 minutes. Chunking down your time and demanding that you focus on one thing and one thing only creates urgency, maximizes your productivity, and frees up more time for you to do other things. Time comes to those who make it, not those who try to find it. Here's a breakdown of the action steps we've gone over so far that will help you put a new bulge in your wallet. Get clear on the amount of money you're going to make, the specifics of what the money's for, and how freaking awesome it feels to make it. Decide, with unshakable commitment, that you are making this money. Get a plan together to make the money you desire to make. Chunk the plan back into bite-sized pieces and focus your ass off on one goal at a time. Hold an image in your mind of the life you're creating and all the money that's flowing towards you with eager excitement, hardcore faith, and deep gratitude. Do your best wherever you're at. If, while building your greeting card empire, you've taken a job scraping gum off the bottom of tables at a bowling alley, instead of being pissed off about having a job that you don't exactly love, what you focus on, you create more of. Find the silver lining. Be the best damn gum scraper that table has ever worked with, and have an attitude of gratitude. A desire to grow is not the same as being negative about where you're at. When the universe presents a how that leads in the direction of your goal to make more money, instead of talking yourself out of it, leap into its loving arms immediately, especially if it's scary. When the thoughts come to you, all you need to answer for yourself are these 3 questions. Is this something I want to be, do, or have? Is this leading me in the direction of my goal? Is it going to screw anybody over if I do this? If you get satisfactory answers to those questions, go for it. Let your fear be your compass. Remember that $85,000 I told you I manifested to pay for my big fat coaching package? Well, I'ma tell you how I did it, because it was right up there with one of the scariest, most uncomfortable things I've ever done. Once I decided to get coached at that level for reals, instead of running and hiding like I did the first time around, I acted on an idea that came into my mind the moment it arrived. This idea was not something that was fun or comfortable or anything I'd pass up having a full-body waxing session to go do, but I did it because my desire to kick ass was stronger than my desire to waste more time living the life I was living. I got the idea of someone I could maybe borrow that money from. Someone who, A, knew very little about coaching, and what she did know probably brought to mind words like snake oil and manipulative garbage and bunch of weirdos. B, is the most frugal McDougal person I'd ever met. The kind who has money but never, ever spends it, except to stockpile toilet paper when it goes on sale. C, believed in me. I bought a plane ticket to fly to her house the moment the terrifying thought took over my brain, which cost about $1,000 more than usual, thanks to the last-minuteness of it all, and arrived on her doorstep, surprising the hell out of her. I risked being vulnerable to this person. I risked her thinking I was out of my mind, irresponsible, very possibly in a cult. And I will never forget the pained face she made when I told her how much I needed. But after much uncomfortable discussion, she forked it over. And I proceeded not only to make the money to pay her back in less than a year, but, thanks to the fact that I'd faced my terror and asked, along with getting a year of some of the best coaching I ever got, I went where no Jen Sincero had ever gone before. I took huge, terrifying risks on a consistent basis, hired a team to create videos and improve my online structures unlike the old days of doing it all myself, created new products and services, upped my rates, and reached out to clients who were out of my league, sat my ass down and wrote a book that became a New York Times bestseller. Basically, I did all the things I was too scared, cheap, lazy to do before, and all of which led to the seven-figure business and brand I have today. And it never would have happened if I hadn't started by doing something I so did not want to do. Important $85,000 note. If you're listening to this and thinking, oh yeah, I'll just scoot on out and ask all the many people I know with $85,000 lying around for a loaner, I want to be clear. The price tag is irrelevant. Transforming your life is about your desire and your decision. It's not about what solutions may or may not be right in front of you. If you decide you absolutely must manifest a certain amount of money to provide yourself with the resources to get rich, be it $80 or $80,000, the money exists. It's just a matter of how serious you are about getting it for yourself. One of the fastest ways of talking yourself out of doing what you need to do to succeed is collapsing into victimhood, deciding that other people have more available to them and that you have it harder. So why bother? You very well may have it harder than most people, but people who've had it even harder than you have done miraculous things with their lives. Success is not about where you're at. It's about where and who you decide you're going to be. When you decide to get rich, the options are out there, and while they might take a while for you to wake up to, when you do, it will all come down to how badly you want to change. Success story. If she can do it, so can you. A client of mine, Kelly, went from making an average of $4,500 a month to an average of $35,000 a month by scaring the crap out of herself. Kelly has her own t-shirt company. At the time, she was frustrated by the fact that no matter how much money she made, she always barely had enough to get by. Something always came up that sucked it away. Her car would break down, an unexpected bill would show up, a family member would need bail money. She wanted to take on more business, but couldn't handle more on her own, and she felt she was too busy to train someone. Then, when business was slow, she told herself she couldn't afford to hire and train someone because business was slow. She stayed in this loop for years and years. I had convinced myself that there was no way I could hire someone. I was late on my mortgage, didn't have any new business coming in, and I kept thinking, how can I be responsible for someone else's income too? When my coach told me I had to commit to hiring someone if I wanted to grow, I was utterly terrified. But then my mindset suddenly shifted. It was like, once I was given permission to do it, I had this epiphany that, of course, it's so obvious this is what I have to do. Before this shift, there was no way I could see it. The second I committed to making the hire, I had no choice. I had to make the money to pay him. It totally terrified me, but also totally motivated me. I knew immediately I'd made the right decision because once he started working for me, the floodgates opened and all the business I was psychically pushing away started coming toward me. There was no way I could have handled all the business that came in without him. After our first coaching session, I raised my frequency by making the scary but exciting commitment to bring someone else on, visualized and said affirmations about bringing in the money I desired to make, and within the first week, wound up making $26,000. In 1 week, I feel like it was 50% magic, 50% hard work. What a wonderful feeling to not wake up in the middle of the night stressing out about money. Human beings have unlimited potential, and most of us are just scraping the surface of our own powers. If you're not where you want to be financially, think about where you're holding back. We pretend we've done everything we can, and we work harder and harder doing the same things we've always done, hoping for different results. Meanwhile, there is almost always a solution right in front of our faces that we're ignoring because we've decided it's out of the question. There's a big difference between can't and don't wanna. Getting rich is not necessarily about working harder. In fact, it is usually about working less because you're making smarter choices. When Kelly hired her first employee, she no longer had to work as hard as she was working, and she massively increased her income. So much so that she purchased two new printing machines, hired a second employee, and started looking for a bigger space for her business, all within a few months. And it all started because she made the decision to grow and did the one thing that scared the living crap out of her that she knew would get her to her goal. Last resort spending. Sometimes the scary risk we need to take to get to the next level is spending money we don't yet have. It's the money version of leap and the net will appear, and it's a very controversial topic because basically what I'm saying is go into debt. And debt is the big bad wolf in our society. But debt, like everything else, is all about your mindset. Spending money you don't have recklessly, living beyond your means, digging a deep old hole for yourself with a mindset of fear and denial and no real drive or plan to pay it off, is one mindset. I am not recommending you do this. I am also not recommending you go into debt if you feel there are other options. This is a last resort option, but a viable one, only if you've got the right mindset in place. Going out on a limb and demanding of yourself that you rise to the occasion and do not stop until you make the money back is the mindset I'm talking about. It's like when you want to go on a trip, but you can never find the right time. Buy the damn ticket, book the hotels, get everything in place, and then work your schedule to fit around it. If you wait for a time to open up, it will never happen. Same with this. If you wait to have the money first, it may never happen. I did this over and over when I was stretching myself to get out of my rickety-ass lifestyle and become rich. I got new credit cards to pay for my coaching, and then did everything my coaches told me to do, no matter how terrifying, to make the money back. And each time I paid my debts off within months. If I had waited until I made the money I needed at my then income of 30 grand a year, I never would have been able to hire a coach and feed myself at the same time. I had to take the terrifying leap of going deeper into debt, but I did it with total faith in myself because I was ready to turn my life around. Taking these types of risks is about being in charge of your life rather than a victim. It's about having faith in the universe and yourself that you can and will manifest anything you desire. It's about who you become in this process. If you need to take out a loan to rent a space to put your new store in, or borrow money to pay your new assistant, put a plan in place to pay off your debts and demand of yourself that you make the money back. You don't get anywhere sitting around inside your comfort zone. Receive and spend the money with faith and gratitude that it's coming back to you. Keep your frequency high and your focus strong. Demand of yourself that you do everything, especially taking many more scary leaps to new heights, to make the money back. And do not stop until you do. To get rich. Suggested money mantra. Say it, write it, feel it, own it. I love money because I am a fearless, badass, money-making machine. 1. Anticipate your obstacles. Doubt is like the little string you tug on that unravels the whole sweater. Get clear on the top 3 things that could bring doubt to your resolve, and prepare yourself to meet them head-on so they are powerless over you. Example, My spouse won't be supportive of me. Have a mantra ready. Only I know my own truth, and I know in my bones that I am rich. Write down the obstacles and write down the solutions. 2. Raise your bottom line. So often our decision muscle only really kicks in when our backs are against the wall and we have to make the money. Rent is due, we need surgery, the mafia is at the door with an IOU. Decide on an amount that is going to be your new bottom line so it's no longer zero. Let's say $500. You have to have $500 in your bank account at all times. And the second you get near that amount, you sound the rallying cry to up your game and bring in more money so you don't go below that amount. Then keep raising your bottom line every month or so, and soon you'll no longer be in a struggle. 3. Spend money in new ways. Buy something extravagant to raise your frequency and remind yourself that you are in the flow and that money is a renewable resource. Something expensive, exciting, something that won't break the bank but that feels decadent, has great meaning to you, and inspires you to kick some ass. 4. Make one big, hairy, scary, non-negotiable decision right now that will move you toward your financial goal, and do it. I mean it, right now. Something you've had in the back of your mind that you know would totally change your world, but have been too scared to do. Snooze not, lose not. There's no time like the present. Please fill in the blank. I'm grateful to money because... Chapter 9. Moving on up. When I was in my early 20s, I moved to Barcelona, Spain, with a bunch of friends from college. We rented a rundown apartment in a shady part of town, dragged all of our furniture in off the street, drank like fiends, lived like pigs, rocked and rolled all night, and partied every day. Because Spain is right around the corner from Italy, I decided one weekend to take the train to Naples and visit my relatives on my dad's side of the family. I couldn't wait to party in the old country with my cousin, Valentina, check out the local scene, get to know her better, and present her with the giant chunk of hash I had hidden inside of a box of tampons for her. When I arrived, I discovered, much to my horror, that our big Saturday night out involved gathering a bunch of her friends together and strolling around the plaza, eating gelatos and people watching. If we were feeling especially wild, we'd go back and get another gelato. It was like going into rehab. As disappointed as I was, I couldn't help feeling a pang of shame every time we passed a bunch of staggering American 20-somethings drunkenly shouting, "Oh, solo mio," in the streets. Unlike American me, Valentina grew up with a bottle of wine on her dinner table and was not met with a raised parental eyebrow and a, "Just what the hell do you think you're doing?" should her underage hand reach for it. This is partly why she was having wholesome, Annette Funicello evenings out, and why I was on my way to waking up in the emergency room with a stomach-pumping tube shoved down my throat, and returning home with my hash untouched. To her, booze was no big deal. It was part of everyday life. A bottle of wine had the same excitement factor as the loaf of bread next to it on the table. To me, however, it was taboo, dangerous, as thrilling and irreverent as smoking cigarettes or calling people's parents by their first names. I was over 21. Nobody was the boss of me anymore. I could do whatever I wanted, and so I did, no matter how nauseated it made me. Our environment shapes everything from our drinking habits to our financial situations to our physical appearance, and the longer we immerse ourselves in certain surroundings, the more they influence us. Ever notice how people start to look like their dogs after a while? Or how you start to say tomato instead of tomato the longer you hang out in England? And I don't know about you, but I have a closet full of stuff I bought on vacation. A 25-pound knitted woolen sweater from Iceland, rings for all my toes from India, a pointy straw hat that makes me look like a drink umbrella from Vietnam, all of which I wore constantly while away, none of which have yet to leave my closet now that I'm home. When it comes to money, who and what you surround yourself with has a huge effect on how you perceive it and feel about it. Your environment helps define what you consider to be expensive or cheap, a wise or stupid purchase, and how much you'll allow yourself to make. In fact, here's a sobering exercise. Take the average income of the five people you hang around with most, and you'll most likely find yours. Had I stayed in Italy and hung out with Valentina, I probably would have avoided the bloated 20 pounds of alcohol weight I gained in Barcelona, and I'd still have the bracelet my grandmother gave me that I lost wagering on a drunken game of darts one night. I suck at darts. What was I thinking? At that time in my life, however, I ran with a boozy tribe. I prided myself on my unbroken record of downing a beer bong in under 10 seconds. I wasn't interested in the finer things in life, like good health and waking up in places I remembered walking into. Without giving it much thought, we accept our environment to be reality, to represent what normal life looks like. Doesn't everyone know how to do a keg stand? This is why, when you decide to upgrade your income and standard of living, it's important to put yourself in the new environment you're intent on creating for yourself as best you can. It not only jars you out of your old way of thinking, believing, and being, but it gives the new environment an opportunity to start having an effect on you and to start becoming your new idea of normal instead of, as if, me? Go test drive the car you'd love to buy every week. Walk around in the stores you can't wait to shop in and try on clothes. Stroll through the neighborhoods you'll buy a house in one day and pick out the one you like best. Hang out in the international terminal of the airport. Go to the marina and check out the boats. Watch documentaries about people rafting down the Grand Canyon. Show up on the free days at the gym you're going to join. Whatever it is that turns you on, go soak in it. Back in my money-free days, I was living in Los Angeles, way over on the east side, in a neighborhood I didn't like but could afford. I braved crosstown traffic several times a week to go hang out in a neighborhood all the way on the west side, by the beach, that I really wanted to live in but felt was too expensive. I loved the idea of living by the ocean, hearing the waves crashing while I drifted off to sleep, taking long walks as the sun set over the water, waiting in line at the bank alongside guys in wetsuits holding surfboards under their arms. That's how I wanted to roll. The only problem was, that's the way a lot of people wanted to roll, and finding a place to live at the beach cost basically twice what I was paying at the time in the neighborhood I hated, or at least that's what everyone said, including Craigslist. I made the 35-minute drive to the beach nearly every other day anyway, set myself up at a coffee shop in the neighborhood I wanted to live in, and pretended I'd just walked there from my place. I told everyone who stood still long enough that I was looking for an apartment, hung up flyers, read the obituaries, told all my friends and asked them to tell their friends. I did everything but put on a sandwich board and hand out my phone number to people on the sidewalk. For months, I couldn't find anything anywhere near my price range. And then one day, something came up on Craigslist that was 3 blocks from the beach and only $100 more than what I was already paying. It sounded too good to be true. And when I went to the open house, it was packed, because apparently everyone else thought it was too good to be true too. But the ad didn't lie. It was 3 blocks from the beach, crazy cheap for that part of town, and it was cozy. What the ad didn't say is that its last tenant was a Toyota Corolla, because the apartment used to be a garage. A one-car garage, let us be clear. But I wanted to live by the beach, and this place was my ticket in. So I wrote a love note about the apartment on my application, called the landlord and told him how serious and tidy I was, showed up the next day while he was painting the place and brought him a pastrami sandwich on rye, and finally, probably just to get me to leave him alone, he rented it to me. I realized that me moving into my dream one-car garage isn't all that compelling a financial success story, but the reason I'm sharing it is because it was a stepping stone. It put me in the environment that I dearly desired to be in, and it was from that cheerful little crap heap that I took my first big steps toward making real money, which resulted in me moving out of the garage and into a real live house soon thereafter. But while I was garaging it, I fancied the place up the best I could, painted the bars on the windows a nice bright white, made mobiles out of shells and rocks and hung them from the ventilation pipes on the ceiling, and covered the cracks in the warped garage doors with frames purchased at the dollar store and filled them with photos of my friends. The fact that I could smell and hear the ocean, that I could ride my bike everywhere and swim whenever I felt like it, made a gigantic difference in my energy and my outlook on life. I felt inspired, happy, and in my element, and I had also proven to everyone, including myself, that I could do the impossible. I found an apartment in Venice Beach that was cheap. We are energetic beings driven by emotion. So if your surroundings depress you, it's critical that you do whatever you can to brighten things up. Slap on a fresh coat of paint. Clean your windows. Hang up pictures from magazines of places you'd love to live in or visit and look at them all the time. Get some plants. Tidy up your clutter. Throw a nice bedspread over your ratty couch. And if you've got sheets thumbtacked over the windows, please get some damn curtains. I have some friends who are getting ready to sell their house, so they cleaned the crap out of it, painted the rusty back door, weeded the yard, patched all the holes in the walls, did all these things to fancy it up to sell, and were mortified that they didn't bother to do it while they live there because it completely changed the feel of the place. You don't need to spend loads of money or time on this. Little things can make a huge difference. And this is much more than an adventure in Martha Stewart land. This is an investment in your potential. Beauty can grow from the muck, but not without the proper nourishment and energy. Shabby is as shabby does. So take one day, one little day, and spend it tending to raising the frequency of your surroundings. This goes for everything in your physical environment. The clothes you wear, the food you eat, the music you listen to, the places you stroll. Be very conscious of what brings you joy, purposefully participate in those things as best you can, and ditch anything that brings you down or makes you yawn. My friend told me this hilarious story about having a French roommate who was watching her get changed one day and said, in her thick Parisian accent, "Your underwear makes me believe you are sad and hate your life." My friend looked down at her utilitarian cotton panties, an old pair from a 5-pack purchased at Target, and thought, "But they're bikinis. At least they're not the high-waisted granny ones. Doesn't that count for something?" The most important part of your environment to be conscious of is the people you surround yourself with, especially when you're just starting to flex your new faith muscles, plow past all your doubt, fears, and worries, and get some real money flowing into your life. You need all the strength you've got, and there ain't no bigger oil slick than the peer, friend, or family member who lobs an unhelpful zinger in your path like, "I just read an article about how 4 out of 5 new restaurants don't make it. You could lose everything you've got if your restaurant idea fails." Nothing pops our balloon of belief like the pointy pin of a pal. Make an effort to surround yourself with people who cheer you on and offer support, not who hand you a "good luck with that" bag of turds, or the old favorite, "I'm telling you these negative things because I'm worried about you. I'm just trying to help." That's basically them saying, "I'm small and scared and I'm rubbing it all over you, but you can't object because it means I care." Worriers, doubters, freakers, sad sacks, small thinkers, complainers, naysayers, whiners, chunters, grumpers, scaredy cats. These are not the people you want to share your dreams with. The problem is, upgrading your environment in the human department is a bit more challenging than putting down some throw rugs or planting sunflowers in your yard, especially if the most unhelpful people happen to be related to you. This is one of the most common and upsetting conundrums people go through when they decide to get rich, so you are not alone if you're wondering WTF. Here's what you can do when your peeps are negative, fearful, and don't support your ass-kickery. Do not try to change them. Encourage them, love them, offer advice when asked, tell them you think they're the bee's knees, but don't make it your project to try and get them to see the light. First of all, you can't get them to do anything unless they're willing to evolve. If they're stuck in fear about you changing your life,